Well, welcome to Week to Week, the political roundtable from the Commonwealth Club of California for Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. This week, by the way, we learned, so there's a campaign event of Donald Trump's. You know I was going to go right to Donald Trump. At which he ordered Chris Christie to stop eating Oreo cookies. But it gets better. Now we learn from the New Yorker that Donald Trump had Chris Christie fetch Trump's McDonald's order. So that's our future if Trump is elected. We will all be Chris Christie. Listen, thank you for joining us here today for our little happy meal of a program in San Francisco. I'm John Zipperer, your host for Week to Week and the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial. By the way, if you like politics, I'm kind of assuming you either like politics or you wouldn't be here, or you like wine or whatever. But if you like politics, then a week from today, on June 22nd, we have top Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett coming to the Commonwealth Club. You'll want to catch that. I think those tickets are going to sell out pretty quickly. So on to today's program.
May I interrupt for 1 second? Happy Meals have been banned in San Francisco.
Have they? Then this is the only place you get it.
Remember they said you couldn't have all the toys? Okay.
And it's, Chris Christie also has got to be the worst person to send out to get your Happy
Meals. That's right.
He would never come back.
Yeah.
Count the French fries. Okay, listen, on today's program, we, of course, are going to talk about the presidential race and as well as some on the Senate race here in California. We have, of course, some conversation on the Orlando mass murder, the Stanford rape case, and some other political news. As always, I note that the Commonwealth Club of California is a place for people with a wide range of views. So any opinions expressed are those purely of these speakers and not of the Commonwealth Club. Now let's meet our panelists for today. I'm going to start, as usual, on the other end of the stage with Joe Garofoli, senior political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's on Twitter at Joe Garofoli. Next to him is Barbara Marshman, the editorial page editor for the Mercury News. She's also on Twitter at Barb Marshman. And next to me is Deborah J. Saunders, a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, also the, air quotes, token conservative blogger on sfgate.com. And, of course, she's on Twitter at Deborah J. Saunders. So there are cards spread throughout the room. I think most of you know how we do this. Write down some questions if you have them, and Fran will be picking them up and delivering them up to me, and I will do my best to ask as many as possible during the program. Now on to the roundtable. I guess on a serious note, actually, let's skip Donald Trump until a little bit later, and let's first talk about what happened in Orlando. Probably the worst news of the week. I'm sure you all heard about it. A man walked into a gay nightclub early Sunday morning, killed about 50 people, another 50 or so injured. Barbara, earlier this week, House Democrats in Washington erupted into anger when the House held yet another moment of silence. And today, Senate Democrats are holding a filibuster. I believe it's still going on. Mm-hmm. What do you make of this?
It's fascinating to me that these homegrown terrorists really defy all of the all of the stereotypes, all of the let's go to war and beat ISIS. If you start carpet bombing the Middle East, you don't help get the homegrown terrorists in line, like, you know, the San Bernardino folks and now this one. I find it frustrating that that everybody is talking as if there is some individual strategy that will help with this particular kind of terrorism, and I haven't seen it yet. I mean, even if you think we could invade somewhere and declare victory against Islamic State fighters, I don't see how that helps us at home.
Right. And Trump used the moment to talk about, he kind of ramped up his call not only to ban Muslims from the country, but to ban or call for banning folks from other parts of the world, not necessarily any countries, but other parts of the world where there have been terrorism committed against the United States or its allies. So, I mean, once you start closing those doors, that means you're going to close a door from people from London, people from Paris, people from India, from people from Tokyo. It's like, okay, so who can come over here anymore? Yeah. So and he didn't spell it out. He said, like you said, where's the plan? He said, we need to be tough. We need to be smart. But he didn't say, what are we going to do? And Clinton, for that matter, didn't spell out a hell of a lot either.
I mean, what happens after something horrible like this is that everybody goes into their corners, into their talking points. And Republicans say, they fault President Obama for not wanting to say radical Islam. And I faulted him for that. I have to say that. But, you know, by the time this happens, what difference does it make if he says it? And, you know, I'd like to hear it, but I understand why he is hesitant to say it. And look at Hillary Clinton. So Donald Trump said, and Hillary Clinton won't say it. She did. Did anything change?
Right.
No, it didn't. You know, Trump had his Muslim ban and all that other stuff. It's crazy. But, you know, let me just say, on the left, to hear Donald Trump say that he's going to stop immigration of Muslims is just so funny when this guy was born in New York near where Donald Trump was born, right?
Right.
So, I mean, and we can all laugh at that, but let's look at what Democrats are talking about doing. Hillary Clinton said she wants to have a ban on buying guns for people who are under investigation by the FBI. That means she can't buy a gun, right? But she can run for president. I mean, this is another thing that just wouldn't work. And so you've got both sides trying to act as if they have a solution. And the solution is just really hard work and hoping that you get people who, I mean, maybe the FBI can do a better job. They did investigate this man. They did talk to him. Mm-hmm. But it's a harsh world.
What did you think Donald Trump actually did today? He was endorsed by the National Rifle Association. He said, however, he was going to talk to the NRA and, you know, about the
gun ban.
Yeah.
And let me just say, okay, fine. You want to pass that. I don't see how it wouldn't have stopped this particular event because this man had been cleared by the FBI.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to say if they've ever started an investigation, you can't buy a gun? Because I just wrote a column Sunday about how former Attorney General Eric Holder said that fingerprinting is racist. It's like racial profiling because more minorities get stopped and then they're not convicted, but they have it on their record and that hurts them. Well, what is a ban on selling guns to people who have been investigated for terrorism? Just tell me what that is. Who is that going to target? And who are going to be the first people screaming that this is profiling against Muslims?
No.
So, go ahead and do it.
But
I'm sorry.
What about the other suggestions that no one should be buying a weapon that can shoot 100 rounds in an hour?
So there are like 12 million assault weapons. There's like 12 million AR-15s in this country right now. So go ahead. Go ahead and outlaw them.
You'd have to have a plan to get them back, but I do think.
And how easy is that
mass,
going to be?
Oh, it's nothing. None of this is easy.
How many people? How many people do you want to see die in that? When you start going to law-abiding people's homes and telling them they have to turn in their guns?
Right. There's not a plan for getting the guns back. Yeah. There's 300 million guns in the country. Well, how do you get them back? I mean, that's the thing. Yes, so, you can start a ban, but that's only of minimal help.
It's like the drug war.
Someone asked, and I had not heard this, but they say on the Orlando shooting, there's suspicion that there were multiple shooters, up to four. Have you heard this? I haven't heard that. You have?
Heard it, but I don't have any idea.
No? Okay.
I just heard it. Saw it on the internet.
That's right. So it must be true.
Yes. Someone else asks, says the ISIS playbook is to provoke unfair hostility to Muslims, to radicalize and recruit members. Trump is playing to the script perfectly. Why don't the Democrats say this and repeat it?
They have said it.
They've said it. I mean, many of us have said it, I think.
Yeah.
Hillary
Clinton's been hitting Trump pretty hard this week and seeming to enjoy it, in fact. I'll start with you, Deborah, but really anyone. Is there an effective way to approach it? Not to solve the problem with all the guns out there and all such, but I mean, is there something we can do besides holding, another moment of silence, which it doesn't seem to work? I'm not putting you on the spot.
Well, I think there's also the matter of data sharing here that we can definitely ramp up our game there. The worst technology in the world is owned by the federal government, and they're not sharing. This is a case of locals and nationals and state folks not sharing data. That's an easy. It's a technical fix, and it might help in some ways because there's always a lot of these cases are people who, how did this guy slip in the cracks? and some ramping up our data game might help a little bit. And that's something that's nonpartisan. We can spend money on that. We can move forward on that.
It's hard to know, though, how someone like this who, I mean, maybe his parents knew. Apparently his wife knew. Yeah. She's from the East Bay, so yeah. I assume we'll hear more about that. There is something to the if people who knew these things were possible spoke up. Yeah, you would need, though, a culture change, because if at the same time you have if you speak up, then somebody's going to be taken, disappeared, you know, and never come back. You worry about that.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. So the gunman's wife, his second wife, reportedly says she tried to talk him out of the attack, but apparently spent a fair number of time driving him around, casing these joints.
Yeah.
Right.
So there is a grand jury now that's being convened to look into whether she should be charged.
Yeah.
Is there any reason not to? I mean, that's an accomplice, right?
The first marriage was abusive, apparently, yeah. And I wonder if that's a mitigating factor, but it sure sounds to me like she should be charged.
Okay. Well, let's move on then. Let's see, what Republican presidential candidate should we talk about?
Let's talk about the Democrats.
We will, because, in fact, we now, at long last, have two presumptive nominees, a Democrat and a Republican. So to make Deborah happy, let's start with the Democrat. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, still won't go away. What do you make of the Democratic side right now?
I wish, by the way, Republicans had a Bernie Sanders who wouldn't give up. Yeah. I wish John Kasich had been that person, yeah. And I wish he'd stayed in through the California primary and all the way up to the convention.
Yeah.
So what were you saying? But here's what's so fascinating. Hillary Clinton, we know that Donald Trump is 70% negative ratings according to a recent poll, and Hillary's at 55%. Do you realize how 2016 should have been the year that Republicans were in the catbird seat? Yeah. She is the second most unpopular presidential candidate in a large field. People don't like her. Democrats, a lot of them don't like her. She is incredibly vulnerable. And this we should be talking about. And if it weren't for
Donald Trump,
spawn of Satan, getting into. I mean, this is what Republicans would be talking about if it weren't for the fact that Donald Trump walked into the race and, you know, he won the most votes. You got to give him credit for that. But he's so completely undermined the Republican Party. It's just breathtaking.
So someone in the audience writes their words: Trump is a racist swine, but Clinton reminds me of Nixon. So what should I know about Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate? Is this the Libertarian's year?
This is the best Libertarian ticket.
Really?
Absolutely.
I don't know these folks.
It's, okay, so Gary Johnson is a former Republican governor of New Mexico, and his running mate is Bill Weld, former governor of Massachusetts. So
Two terms for both.
Yeah. Bluish states, and by the way, Bill Weld studied Latin and did his thesis on Propertius. Yes.
Can you remind us which panelist here also studied Latin?
Please stop.
Joe, who?
Whose name
who would
stop,
that be?
Stop with that. You're killing the crowd if you start going into Latin.
Anybody here study Latin? See?
Sure.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah. Many people study. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
Seminary here.
E pluribus unum. That's all I know.
this really is the year that the Libertarian Party could hit double digits. Do you not?
You think so?
There's a chance. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think for people, that's what, I mean, there are now. And these guys are not bozos. We've talked to Gary Johnson. He's a sharp guy. Now, he's also going to get some of the weed vote because that's he's.
Right.
Know,
but there's no active weed vote in San Francisco, is there, Joe?
No, there isn't. So Bill Weld is, I mean, he and Mitt Romney are best friends. So he's that kind of like, you know, Republican. And so they're legitimate guys. And if you for the Republicans and the Democrats, independents, this is a decent choice.
And what does that do to the result? I mean, if they get a substantial, electing Hillary?
No, right, yes. Because right now they're peeling exclusively off of Trump, the latest polls that I've seen, or largely, which I thought I thought that some would go to Hillary, but
They tend to be sort of isolationist foreign policy wise. Certainly, Gary Johnson. I would imagine Hillary's definitely going to be talking more about legalizing recreational use of marijuana than she has in the past. Yeah. It's true. I mean, there are a lot of Republicans who will vote for Gary Johnson instead of voting for and who otherwise would have voted for a Republican, except they don't want to vote for Trump. But I do think that you're going to find some Bernie Sanders type voters who are going to be looking at Gary Johnson as well.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have someone in the audience who asked a question, and I put it directly to Bill Whalen, our Hoover senior fellow who was here last time. You're a Republican voter. I mean, if you'd care to say, I mean, what's your thinking? And how are you going to make that decision?
Okay, well, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. I was like one of the first person to call him Voldemort, he who should not be named. Mexicans are his muggles, right? I mean, I have a lot of really negative things to say about him.
Oh, please do go on.
But I will say this. The Republicans who have said they're the Never Trump people have a problem, they failed. And all they've done is sort of got the Trump people thinking, aha, you people aren't really Republicans. It just divides things more. And they're sort of like, they're virtue voguers. Oh, I would never vote. And it doesn't work. If it worked, it would be one thing. If they had come up with an alternative candidate, it would be another thing. So I'm waiting till October. And in October, I'll decide if I vote for Gary Johnson or Donald Trump. I think it's possible. I was talking to that Donald Trump could have a sort of a Scrooge-like moment, a dark evening of the soul, where he confronts all of his past, and the next day he realizes, wait a minute, this is serious, and so I'm giving him a chance to prove himself.
So have you heard
that? That would
theory?
Be the October surprise of October
yes,
surprises.
That would be it. If he's running down Fifth Avenue yelling, "It's Christmas, everyone!"
Unfortunately, Fifth Avenue was a place where he said he could shoot someone and still not lose any support. What do you think of the people who have floated the idea? And I guess I'm one of them that says Donald Trump does not actually want to win. The consequences for him of actually being in that office could be so constraining, certainly a pay cut. What do you think of that?
Really possible.
A coworker told me that he had heard this on a KGO morning
Cannon
station.
Carl Cannon wrote a piece about it.
Saying that President Obama, that Donald Trump does not want to win. He actually would prefer to lose because what he has to gain or lose from being the president is much worse for him than if he just goes back to his business empire.
He certainly doesn't describe what he could do as president with any reflection of what the powers of the office are. I mean, he seems to think he would be elected dictator. Of course, Bernie did too, kind of. But I don't know whether he really thinks that or whether, I guess, the alternative explanation would be that he really doesn't want this. He would not want to do this work as it's structured under the Constitution.
Joe?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, for two reasons. One, this sounds like, I mean, it's fun, but it sounds like an elaborate political version of The Producers, where this is one big springtime for Hitler that he's putting on this as a presidential race.
You went there.
But what about, hey, I can jump in the race and help Hillary, to whom I've given money in the past.
No, but he's given, no.
And who
I
came
mean, he
to
talks
my wedding.
About winning. We're going to win so much. He concludes every speech. We're going to win so much, you're going to be sick of winning. You're going to be saying, please, Mr. Trump, please stop winning. The guy who is so driven by winning would not do this to lose. I anything else would surprise us at this stage of the game, but
I think we have to watch carefully to see who's vice president, because I would not at all put it past him to decide he'd had enough of this at some point.
I was just reminded of, do you all remember the original WKRP in Cincinnati? This takes place in this horrible radio station in Cincinnati. And the Arthur Carlson, who is the kind of genial station manager, bit of a goof, but nice guy, he runs for the city council, And he, after he's in it, he realizes he doesn't want it. I think it was he got some information about the other candidate, and he kind of used it, so he felt bad. He was like, morally, I just can't do this. So then he sets out, and he has all of his people trying to make sure that he loses. And so, like, they're calling up, you know, and you know, reporters and saying, are you aware that, you know, Arthur Carlson at night, you know, relaxes, you know, in a women's dress or whatever? And that didn't go over well with Arthur Carlson. He asked, you know, he's like, why can't it just be a pair of slacks and a nice blouse? But... So what I've heard is that Donald Trump, when he got into this, when he was talking to his own people originally, his plan was, I can do a second place. Just get into the double digits. You know, someone else can, you know, Chris Christie or someone who they thought would do better can have their 50% and go away with it. My goal here was to raise my profile and, you know, put up some issues that I care about. And kind of like Bernie Sanders, he caught on.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out sometime in 2017. Mark Halperin and John Heilemann are going to release a book, and we will know how much of this was planned and thought out and how much of it was on a whim and who knew this would happen. And we're not going to know until their book comes out, right?
Yeah, that's right.
that's it.
I gather you've tried.
Someone in the audience points out that Robert Reich states that the divisions in this country now are more between establishment and anti-establishment versus, you know, Republican, Democrat, and such. And kind of if you were to split that up into parties, you'd have very different alignment than we have now. What do you think? And this was a fight really in both parties this year.
The question is, like, would we have multiple parties?
That our divisions are in this country establishment and anti-establishment, you know,
right.
Versus...
From the Democratic perspective, I think that now we're going to see what Bernie Sanders is about. He's going to have a nationwide address on Thursday, you know, at 5:30, right before the Warrior game starts. So, I mean, none of us will be honest. I have to watch it for work. But so he's going to lay out what his next steps are. We hope he is, because this is his moment. He's never going to be as big a rock star as he is right now. So what's the plan? What if there is going to be another party, if he does want to remake the Democratic Party, explain what that's going to look like and give concrete steps as to what that'll be. He's not going to, you know, we talked about, you know, we do have a presumptive candidate. Well, not in Bernie's eyes yet. Yeah. I mean, he still hasn't officially conceded. He hasn't, you know, he's toned down all the stuff. He's not hitting people up for money, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, he is going to be at the convention, and he's going to continue talking about stuff. And so, but one of the things he does want to do is remake the party. And he explicitly says that. There's nobody on the Republican side who is saying that yet. People are talking about it, but no one at his level of, you don't see, you know, former candidates saying it or Paul Ryan or anyone else saying it. So I'm curious to see how the Republicans, if this will shift anything out.
I think so much depends on the millennials that he has attracted, whether they stay in the game and can, by the way, they love it. We referred to Bernie as the zombie candidate a week or so ago, and man, you should have seen the letters.
Ooh, yeah. The zombie army attack.
But, you know, if those, I'll call, at my age, I can call them kids. If those kids stay engaged, they can change the party. But do they want to let Donald Trump win in the meantime would be the question.
A couple questions here from the audience. One is, can the votes for Donald Trump be reversed so that John Kasich could be the Republican nominee? Is there any
delegates,
game,
you mean?
I assume that, yeah.
I think
they're bound here
some
sort round,
of stat,
right?
Like 90% of the delegates are required to stick with their first choice. And then the second ballot, that was always the scenario.
So if no one wins in the first round of voting at the convention, then a lot of the delegates are freed up.
And they're freed up to vote their revised consciences.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kasich gave up. He should have stayed through the California primary, but he didn't.
Yeah. Now, technically, all of them are suspending their campaign.
Yeah, and I voted for him. His name was still on the ballot, but he didn't have a campaign then, so.
Would Donald Trump consider Sarah Palin as a vice president?
Oh.
Do you remember how he looked standing next to Sarah when she was endorsing him and babbling. And I think Donald would draw the line there.
Right. You notice you haven't seen her too much since then.
Have not seen her since.
It's like, don't you have something to do in Juneau or something? You know? So, yeah, she has been off the trail. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think the establishment, anti-establishment division within the parties, they both have this problem. Do you think that could cause a surprise result? I mean, I think regardless of where you are and on the parties, at the moment it looks like Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president. But with that, with the split, talking about where those young people go, what they do, Bernie does not seem to be Bernie, because I'm on a first name basis with the man. Senator Sanders does not seem really gung ho about his not presumptive nominee. I mean, it could this be a real wild card election, or is this thing over?
Well, I will say this. This really has been a rebellion between scripted and non-scripted. And Republicans went for Trump because he sounded like a real human being and he used a normal vocabulary instead of all those, long sentences that candidates use. And Bernie Sanders, you have to give him credit. He's out around talking to people. He doesn't hold back. So you do have to wonder if, this is like a wildest dream scenario, but this could be the year where the third party is something that people are looking at, and that people might be looking at Johnson and Weld, because again, you're just not going to find the kind of scripted thing. If they make it into the debates, and I think that's going to be the real thing on which everything hinges. If Gary Johnson makes it into a debate, and Bill Weld makes it into the debates, the fact that Sanders and Trump have so confounded the experts and any expectations in polls. So this would be the year where you have to just think, gee, maybe, right?
Well, the only thing that kind of stalls that one for me is that these guys are, they are libertarians, but they are traditional politicians. They're governors, and they were Republican governors. So it's not like these guys are.
It's been
totally
a long time.
It's been a long time, but they talk like politicians. They sound like politicians. Gary Johnson is also kind of a little halting on the stump too. I don't know how he would go over in like a debate type of quick fire type of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel the same. I suspect they will get more support than the party has gotten before because, there's the Ralph Nader and Ross Perot insurgencies do get, but I don't see how they could win, right? I mean, you don't think they could actually win.
I think they could be a factor.
Right.
And that's,
But then it's...
But again, I would have, I was convinced that Donald Trump would not be the nominee for so long. And
yes.
So don't ask me what I think, because I've been wrong a lot this year.
Same.
So
what do you think is more likely, your Donald Trump Scrooge scenario or your libertarian winning scenario?
I'd say they're equally likely.
I'm going to be haunted by the Scrooge visions tonight. I think we're all going to go home tonight.
The dark evening of the soul. People can change.
Speaking of change.
I'm picturing Scrooge giving a turkey to a Mexican.
And by the way, can I say one other thing? Elections are not about who do you like the most. The question is, who's going to be the best president?
Mm-hmm. In theory, yes.
And not that I feel like everybody looked at that when they voted this year, but that's what you have to look at in the end. And you never know what's going to happen.
That's true.
So many things come out of the blue in an election. So,
speaking of things coming out of the blue, someone in the audience actually reminded us, because Melissa Kane had done a presentation on this one of our programs. The GOP can change the rules at the beginning. They did this last time, right at the very beginning of the convention. They changed the rules so that Ron Paul,
yes.
Could not get it. Basically, if you haven't won more than 8 states, you can't get it. And, he only had 8 states. So they literally could say, everyone in favor of saying no one whose name starts with a T gets it. I mean, it's, they can make any rule they want that would do it. And if the people there vote on it, now more realistically, it might be something like on the first ballot, all delegates are unbound. They could vote for anybody else. But still,
it's the rules committee that meets, I believe it's a few days before the convention mm-hmm. starts, and it depends who gets to pack that committee. And then they have to bring it up to the full convention floor to vote on it. And, you know, at least half of those people have pledged to Trump. Now, how many of those people are going to bail on their vote? That's the cause. But he does have the numbers now to override something like this. But if those people are bailing on him.
Well, they're pledged because they weren't all picked, however, as Trump supporters. Right. They were, this is where it gets complicated because different states have different rules, how they're picked, who gets to control how they're picked. But you kind of don't know a lot of their loyalties until they get there. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I want a slice of the advertising revenue of that Republican National Convention because I think the viewership is going to be off the scales. Someone writes, John Kasich is the sitting governor of the state where the Republican convention is being held in Cleveland. No one has so much power to manipulate the outcome, or he has so much power, excuse me, cause a power outage, et cetera. And I look forward to the Donald picking Newt Gingrich as his veep so that the Republican Party can have a ticket with six wives between them.
As family values.
Right. We'll do the comedy, okay, folks?
Very good.
I did want to get to the state senate election. Of course, Barbara Boxer is leaving at the end of this term. And we just had a primary, and we ended up with two Democrats. Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez. This was expected, right, Deborah?
Well, Paul Mitchell didn't expect it. He's this great data cruncher in Sacramento, and he said that if it was two Democrats in this race, he would run around the Capitol naked, which he did at 1 in the morning, election night, and he was tweeting, streaking. And so I don't think there are any.
There were some blurry photos.
There were some blurry photos.
Nothing you couldn't see. I was trying to blow them up. If I look like him, I might run around
again,
naked too.
Yeah. This has been a year where the experts are just wrong. Yeah. And he really, he's highly respected, really knows the numbers. I predicted it was going to be two Democrats just because this is a Democratic state. And, you know, we had three Republicans, Duff Sondheim, Tom DelBacaro, and then Ron Unz jumped in. And, you know, I think it's time for maybe they should next election for a Senate race like this, stick all the Republicans in one room and see who crawls out and he gets to run. Because if you have three Republicans against each other, you really don't stand a chance. Now, you take their combined votes and it's still not clear, they would have made it. And so it's going to be a race between Kamala Harris, the Attorney General, Northern California type. She's like Berkeley. And Loretta Sanchez, she's like Orange County, Disneyland. And she's just, I mean, and this really is a cultural thing where snobby Northern Californians really look down at Loretta Sanchez because she doesn't have the Kamala Harris style. She's also more moderate, more willing to work across the aisle. And she'll be getting, a number of Republican votes in November.
She has to if she's, she's going to need a chance.
It's her only chance.
We're talking about there's a poll that came out today or yesterday, USC poll that said 2/3 of Republicans don't plan on voting in the Senate race. So I was like, that's not good.
That's
news.
A mistake.
Yeah.
Now is we were chatting about this in the green room before the program. So Bill Kristol. We mentioned this. The conservative strategist and such is pushing the idea of a third party to try to get the conservative vote. And there are different ways you can assume what they are hoping to get out of that. It's unlikely this person would get elected. But one theory that's been put out there is that this person, by being in the race, would still get those Republicans who otherwise aren't going because they're so upset with Donald Trump. They'll still go. They'll vote for Gary Johnson or this other third party person. You know, they've already written off that presidential level. But then on the down the ballot, they'll vote. And in certain states, Wisconsin, Illinois, where there are some really endangered Republican incumbents, that might help them. Because, again, you at least get those folks voting for the down ballot Do you think that make, does that hold, no?
Well, okay, so I really love Bill Kristol. I think he's a great guy. I have breakfast with him every time I go to Washington. I love doing that. So I hope I can still have breakfast after this. but he, you know, this whole Never Trump thing, they never picked a good alternative. Mm-hmm. And he is, I'm sure you folks here, because you guys follow politics, he picked this guy, David French, nobody ever heard of, who writes for the National Review. And then David French didn't really want it. So nobody really wants, you know, and here there's a problem with deciding nobody's good enough for you. So if you want to push somebody else, tell people to vote for Gary Johnson if you don't want them to vote for Donald Trump. Yeah. Or tell them to vote for Donald Trump because he's the nominee and he is the choice of most Republican voters. And Republicans agree with him a lot more than they do with Hillary Clinton. But this idea of we're going to find somebody who's really right for us and you can't agree tells you everything you need to know. You can't be that precious.
Right. That person should have surfaced by now. If they haven't surfaced by now, they're not coming. Plus, there's the logistical nightmare of getting on the ballots and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
We need to page Melissa Kane to walk us through that. But it's not happening.
And Gary Johnson, by the way, will be on the ballot on all 50 states because they worked early. Yeah. So the Libertarians, which is very unusual thing. So they're there. So why would you do that?
Yeah.
Not to make this all about the Commonwealth Club, but Bill Kristol will be at the Commonwealth Club, so
don't tell him
clear your calendar.
Was that question inserted just for that plug?
Maybe Chris Christie can pick up your breakfast from McDonald's.
Maybe we could do that.
That would be great. That would be great. I would like that. Well, so there's something else going on that you will all, I think, be seeing and hearing a lot about next week, and that is homelessness in San Francisco. A lot of the big and small media organizations in the city, I think between 70 and 80 of them, are getting together to do what? They're ganging up on the topic of homelessness. So there's going to be a lot of reporting, kind of a big bang approach to it. And it's kind of an unusual thing, right? And we've got, I think it was launched by some leaders of the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle.
Audrey, I think it's Audrey's.
Audrey Cooper, who will be here, by the way, next week. Everything's about us. Any sense of, can this do anything? Are we going to get any ideas out of this, or do we already kind of know everything there is about homelessness? We just don't know what to do about it.
Well, actually, I mean, two things there. One is, there is a strategy that works that keeps 80% of people home. If you put people in supportive housing and get them the medical care and everything they need. And actually, Santa Clara County has some really good, that Palantir, the sort of hazy software company in Palo Alto that does a lot of internet, they built a wonderful bit of software for Santa Clara County that tracks their people. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, if, you know, Suzanne is in the system, she shows up at VMC, it shows up real time on the tracking. She ends up in jail, it shows up real time. And you can track it with the amount of money it's costing. And once you get these people in the system, you can see the services and the money going down because they get preventive care and they stay on their drugs and so on. So that's one thing. The other thing is, people think they know everything about homelessness, but we had a city council race in my district in San Jose this year where one of the candidates, who was in the real estate business, said that the thing to do with the homeless is put them in a camp someplace away from other people and then go in and see which ones you could help. The concentration camp refugee, it's just, wow. We've had those. We ours was called the Jungle. It was the largest homeless encampment in the country. And it was a nightmare. It was just a horrible place, even though people giving services were there all the time. So I don't mean to monopolize this, but I was thrilled that Audrey came up with this idea. I don't think we're going to put a lot, we are going to have some news stories, but I'm starting on the editorial page the Sunday before to write a lot more about it. I've got some op-eds coming in, and you know, to that extent, we're all in. I think a lot of the reporting is going to be on San Francisco, but we're all about Silicon Valley and San Jose. So,
well, it is interesting talking about being able to track the dollars, because that's been one of the complaints here in San Francisco, where we do spend a lot. We've, you know, they're doing some innovative things with these navigation centers, where people actually can have a bit more, a little bit more permanence and such. And I think they do some matching up with services there. But even, you know, the supervisors who have made this their issue are like, well, we can't, we don't know how effective this is.
Actually, I mean, there is documentation out there. It exists. And if you're not, I mean, if you're just giving people a temporary bed, that's probably not going to work. But 80% of the people who go through supportive housing stay housed. Oh. And end up with jobs, or you help them cobble together disability and other payments. Veterans, you know, a lot of the homeless are veterans, and they're just not getting the benefits that they could get if they were organized and in one place. It really is astonishing what can be done, I think. So I'm excited about the attention. I particularly just want to get rid of the concentration camp idea, for starters.
Yes. And journalistically, this is a really kind of innovative thing to have news organizations that are generally competing against each other working on the same issue. And there's been coordination. There's been the meetings between the media groups and talking about, you know, what kind of issues to work on, what stories to work on. But they're all being done independently. But just the enormous spotlight that we're going to have on it. We're going to be doing like a week's worth of stories and editorials, all that stuff, but having it on multi platforms, and then that'll bring in the national attention to it, and you know, more ideas, more people thinking about this, the better, because we all know that things, you know, there have been ideas that are out there, but we haven't done them, and hopefully this will be focused on that will help. Bring light to the problem and maybe more solutions, and we can get something done.
Yep.
Okay. We have got a bunch of questions. Don't worry, I am going to try to get to these next after we get to our next topic, and that is the Stanford rape case. There is a judge who is under fire, pretty broad level areas of criticism about a topic. I mean, it's not a fun story to get into, but this was a young man at... Was he a student at Stanford when this happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Freshman.
Who sexually assaulted a young woman who was unconscious. And the judge handed down a sentence of 6 months. And so there are calls for a recall election and such. Barbara, I know you folks there have been covering it quite a bit in the Mercury News. What can you tell us?
We have been forehead deep in it, because before the sentence actually came down, the probation report recommended the light sentence, although it had some factual errors in it, like his drug history and so on, which said he didn't have one. A columnist, Scott Herhold, my good friend, always controversial, wrote that he thought the probation recommendation was right. And he had, you know, his own reasons for it. But that instant, when the sentence came down and Judge Persky accepted that recommendation and gave Brock Turner what really is 3 months in jail. He'll be out September 2nd. It was just, I mean, I have never seen the flood of letters, story reactions of people calling for Scott to be fired. I mean, it was just astonishing for a while. What's happened since with the... There are a couple of good things. One is taking another look at the law, because federal law would have made what Brock Turner did rape. California law has a different standard, and there is now talk in the legislature of changing that standard. The judge, I'm not clear whether what he did was out of line for the judiciary in our county. That's not to say it was right. I think it was really wrong in this case, because I think this person, I believe, was a predator, based on the reports I have read and the investigation. But you can be wrong once and, you know, not deserve to be recalled. What we're trying to figure out is a way to analyze how sentences in general in the county go in these cases, and do we have a systemic problem, or is Aaron Persky just way out there by himself?
Deborah, speaking of controversial columnists.
Yes.
So how many people here read the 12-page statement from the victim? Okay. Anybody who reads this, you are so furious when you read her statement. The idea, because basically Brock Turner, and we don't know the victim's name, but Brock Turner basically said, yeah, he was drunk, and he'd like to be able to use this as an opportunity to warn other people against drinking and the party culture. He didn't take responsibility for what he did. And the fact that he got, Barbara's right, essentially a 3-month sentence, it's an outrage. You want somebody in a situation like this to take responsibility. And if somebody's going to get a light sentence, you want it to be somebody who says, oh, my God, I can't believe I did this. It's wrong. I was guilty. And that you want them to hand themselves over to the court because they realize how awful it was. And that's the person you'd want to give a chance to, not some entitled kid who says, oh, yeah, it's because I was drinking and I really want to be a mentor to other people and tell them not to drink. And of course, let's add what happened is they're out behind a dumpster. She's passed out. He's on top of her. Two Swedish students go by on their bikes. They see him on top of her. They intervene. They realize she's passed out, and he runs away. Pure consciousness of guilt, okay? So we know that this guy is a predator and he deserves a tough sentence. Now, two things I've got to say about this. One is this happens, I think, a lot more frequently than we know. Right. And what people, seeing all these legislators from Sacramento, and of course I mean Democrats because that's mostly what they are, right? They're all on the war path about this judge. And what you have to understand is, what do you think Sacramento's been doing since Jerry Brown got elected with this Democratic legislature? What do you think realignment does? The fact that this young man is going to jail instead of prison, that's all a change from what's happened in the judicial system under realignment. And because of this, the kind of sentences and he's going to jail, he can serve half of his sentence. So all of these, the idea that this is an outlier, I think, you know, and I've been making a bunch of phone calls, I'm writing something on it for Sunday, but I also have a column in Tomorrow's Chronicle about this, about another role here. So I think probably most everybody in this room agrees 3 months is ridiculously low. But the other part of this story is this young man will be on the sex offender registry for the rest of his life. Yes. And that is, and for everybody who says, how dare you say it ruined his life, guess what it does? He can't get a professional license. He's going to have trouble renting anywhere. For the rest of his life, every year, he has to go into a police station and register. If he moves, he has to go and he has to get fingerprinted. He is going to be in the margins for the rest of his life, and this is a tough sentence. So if you're a defense attorney and this kid is your client, you'd have to be out of your mind to do a plea bargain. Why would you say, yes, my kid, this kid, he's an adult. Yes, Brock is guilty. You're going to turn yourself over to the mercy of the court when it's a lifetime sentence. It's time for Sacramento, instead of grandstanding on this, to come up with some smarter ways. This is amazing. So I didn't know this. Sacramento, California is the first state in the country with a sex offender registry. We've had it since 1947. You know how many sex offenders there are in this state? About 100,000. 25,000 of them are in prison. Some of them have had sentences 50 years old. Now, the people who run this registry said there are too many, and they've asked Sacramento to make it so that if somebody doesn't reoffend, they can get off. And there are some other ways that it can happen, but it's really not, it's not a viable thing for most people. And so why don't we, instead of, so you're going to see, we'll see a lot of grandstanding on this, and it's really easy to get angry, and I'm angry at this 3-month sentence, but if you really want that sort of thing not to happen, and it's possible that without the sex lifetime registry, that the defense attorney would have said, no, this kid, I don't want him in jail, and he would have fought it, and this poor victim would have to go through and testify and do this all the way through. And it's possible that the judge would have said, Stanford kid, I went to Stanford, I feel a little more sorry for him, and he would have gone easier. But we do know that with the system that we have, there's really not enough of an incentive for a plea bargain that spares the victim from having to testify.
Actually, Jeff Rosen offered something very close to what the judge did as a plea bargain, if the defendant would do as Deborah said and truly admit guilt and take responsibility.
But he'd be on the sex offender registry for life. And there are not very many defense attorneys who want to start off with that as the result.
Someone in the audience asked, what is the process of a recall of the judge in Stanford? Is this something that someone's actually initiated it, or it's just calls for it?
There have been a million some online signatures. They have just, I believe, taken out papers. I think the clerk keeps changing the number, but I think it's something close to 70,000 signatures needed. Might be 60,000. It's very hard to recall a judge. Unfortunately, Persky is actually, his term is up this year, but nobody filed to run against him. So to unseat him that way, you would have to run a write-in campaign, which also is extremely difficult. So I don't know what will happen there. Jeff Rosen, the DA, just they call it papered Judge Persky on another sex offense case, said, you know, we don't want to hear this in front of him, and he may have a there have also been jurors who refused to serve, although there's some thinking those are folks who just don't want to do jury duty. But the DA, I think, is serious.
And then there's the bid where the lawmakers have asked, so what, state judicial council performance?
Right.
And I have to tell you, that's really sort of gross, because this is not an ethics issue. This is you. If I mean, even the Stanford law professor who's friendly with the victim's family, and Michelle Dauber, I think her name is right, she said no. The recall is the way to go. You don't come up with this sort of trumped up, sideways way of going at it. If you want to go against this judge, go head on and look at the record and look at his record, and that's the way to decide.
If he didn't rule outside of what he could rule, then.
And the probation officer, as Barbara mentioned, recommended that sentence. Now you can disagree with it. But that was the recommendation of the probation. The DA wanted 6 years, and the probation officer said under a year in jail, 3 years probation, and he got 6 months, really 3 months, and 3 years probation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about so many horrible things today. I thought I would read this message from someone in the audience. Today's New York Times carried a story about a man who collapsed onto the tracks of a subway platform with the train 2 minutes away. Three perfect strangers immediately jumped onto the tracks to save him. So there's hope for the planet. I don't know if any of you saw the week-to-week news quiz I had printed out there. Turn it over, and there's a photocopy of a letter that George Herbert Walker Bush wrote and left in the Oval Office for Bill Clinton. This was, of course, right after Bill Clinton had beaten him in that election in 92. I don't know. I think you'll find that a very heartwarming thing.
And it is.
It was an amazing letter.
It's a lot of humanity in that letter that we're missing right now.
Yeah. I mean, he was basically saying, you know, he was giving some advice about just, you know, the role, the office, but he was ending by saying, you know, you're our president now. This is George Herbert Walker Bush to the other guy from the other party who just beat him in a really hard-fought election, and he said, I'm going to be rooting for you. So good things do happen. Back to the bad stuff. someone directs this toward Deborah, said that you said that, you know, more Republicans agree with Trump than with Clinton, and saying it in a non-snarky way, do you know what Trump really believes? I mean,
well, boy, that's really the question, isn't it? That's the question. We know that he has been a Democrat. We know that he's given a lot of money to Democrats. That's a really good question. He seems to be flexible in his
flexible and vague at the same time,
yes.
You know,
and self-contradictory. Yeah. So
I think people like what he said, connect with what he says. I don't think they take the next step to think about what he believes.
But you know, I've had some very very smart people say to me that they think he'd be a good president. You can, by the way, how you saw the Saturday Night Live that he was in? He was, it's not just that he was funny, which doesn't really mean anything about being president. You could tell that Lorne Michaels really liked Donald Trump because he got really, they did a big bit about if Trump's president and he's in the Oval Office and he's saying, oh, we're winning everything, and there's all this good news coming in, and the Mexican president comes in and says, here, Donald, here's a check for the wall. We threw in an extra million. We're so happy. I mean, this is there are a lot of people who know Donald Trump and think that he, on a personal level, is a far more thoughtful human being, and that he would knows how to that he would be the kind of person who governs closer to the center. So that's
well. Let me build on that and open this up to all three of you, which is that. And someone asked, you know, for your suggestions or your thoughts on the VP candidates for Hillary and Donald, particularly with Donald, the Donald. Could he find someone who would make people who are worried about him being the off the rocker person feel more comfortable about that? Could he find his George Herbert Walker Bush to be a VP?
If John Kasich agreed to be on the ticket, I think that would make a lot of people think, well, A, we understand why John Kasich got out of the race when he did. But also, I mean, I think John Kasich is the kind of candidate that would make people look twice. If he could find a minority candidate, office holder who would go with him, that would. And look, I've talked to Muslims who are going to vote for him and really like him. Mm-hmm. I've talked to Latinos who really like him and are going to vote for him. I think that's something that he could do that would help, is having somebody with credibility. Wouldn't surprise me if he picked Chris Christie, although if he's, you know, sending around pictures of him with Happy Meals, that sort of suggests that if he...
Well, plus it's New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two of the
Al
same.
Al Gore and Bill Clinton.
Well, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that you also have to have someone who's really willing to be a very small second banana there.
Right.
You know, it's like because he has such an outsized personality that's the one thing you have to do. And, you know, what's been interesting is the last couple of days where he's had a very rough week politically. And you haven't seen like a lot of Republicans racing to say, well, wait, no, he's not a bad guy. Usually those people who are doing that are the people you might think, well, maybe he would be a good vice president. Jeff Sessions, a senator from Alabama, is one of his more mainstream supporters. I wouldn't be surprised to see him.
Bob Corker.
Although Corker kind of got a little hinky in the last few days with the other stuff that's been going on. But and going back to what attracts people to Trump, the light went on for me when I went to see him in Fresno, and I spent most of my time just talking to other people there. And the same things kept coming up: was he makes me feel safe, he makes me feel secure. Now, and the way they like the way he doesn't sound politically correct. But they like the tough talk appeals to people mm-hmm. who have a lot of anxiety in their lives about whatever. And I asked a number of Latino folks, like asking people like, oh, you must be getting a lot of crap from your family for liking this guy. And they go, yeah, but you know what? A country has to have borders, and this guy wants to draw one. And these are Latino folks saying this to me. Mm-hmm. And it was eye-opening.
Okay, so briefly then, one last question before we get to the news quiz. Trump University. Yeah, he's facing, I mean, Hillary.
Can we talk about Hillary's running mates?
Sure.
I mean, so I think Javier Becerra, a Democrat from Southern California, would be somebody who would be a smart pick for her. He's really articulate. And, of course, everybody thinks that one of the Castro brothers from San Antonio, not
Joaquin
from Cuba.
Julian.
Yeah, that's right. Would be possible picks for her.
I think that's the Castro, one of the Castro brothers, Leon Castro, is a little bit light. I don't know. Yeah. I've had a couple interactions with him. Becerra is great. I asked him point blank about this when we talked at the convention. And he was like, well, I don't know if enough people know me and stuff like that. He's very, very self-deprecating. And he's very funny. He was making very obscure Star Trek references to me, which
so
I was like, wow.
So he and
wow,
Ted Cruz probably could have a real great time together.
Yes, that's true. That would be a great debate. Star Trek and politics. Wow. That'd be a different demo.
You don't think
I have no real theory. I don't think it'll be Elizabeth Warren. I don't think it'll be Cory Booker. And I... I really haven't looked at the field that closely at this
point. I think she's going to go with Tim Kaine because I don't think she needs the Latino vote as much as she did. So I think that's going to eliminate Becerra and Castro. And if they try to pull this, please, I want everyone to laugh out loud. They're going to say, "Well, Tim Kaine, he speaks Spanish." Well, great, yeah, the white guy speaks Spanish. That's really terrific. So Virginia's a swing state. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they went with him.
Okay. So how many of you have attended Trump University classes?
You Latin files out here.
Sure.
Bill Weld.
Yes.
Bill Weld. Boy, that would be a scandal.
Is Trump University a threat, or is this just kind of one of the bumps you get in the election? I mean, it's...
Well, remember how much... Democrats went after Mitt Romney and people who were laid off mm-hmm. Because of his. I'm sorry, I'm having a senior moment.
Yeah, where he's
Bank Capital.
And those ads were devastating.
And I do think for non-college educated white voters who look at him as a champion, this is going to give them pause because they were rapacious, and just
encouraging people to cash out their savings.
I mean, it's revolting.
I would say it's more predatory than anything. Mitt, of course, Mitt looks like a left winger now, but or at least let's say a Democrat. But I think if she uses it effectively, there is one ad out there now that's fairly effective.
The fake commercial for Trump University.
Yes, yeah.
If you haven't seen that, look for it on Facebook. It's actually pretty funny. Okay. Well, if Fran, our prize person, will come up, we will now move to our news quiz. If you have never been here before, let me quickly explain how we do it. I'm going to read a question. If you think you know the answer, raise your hand. Don't just shout it out. And I'll call on you. And if you get it right, Fran will deliver unto you some Ghirardelli chocolate. So, our first question is, yesterday, an armed suspect was killed after a hostage standoff at what type of a building in Amarillo, Texas? It's a household name, ma'am.
A Walmart?
That's right, a Walmart. Sacramento, California Baptist pastor Robert Jimenez is in the hot seat after a video was circulated showing him giving a sermon praising whom? Ma'am? That's right, the Orlando killer in the green there. So what happened to a man in Saskatchewan who gave a homeless man $3? Did you see this story? He's driving along, saw a guy with a sign, stopped, took off his seatbelt, reach over, give him $3. Nobody? He was fined $175 for taking off his seatbelt. Turns out the homeless man was an undercover police officer. So, yeah.
Missed that one.
Those Canadians are rough.
Stop.
You got it.
Yeah, that's like three columns for you. That would have been three. That would have been three columns for you.
What's the problem?
So, next question then. An appeals court handed down a decision in the Obama administration's favor on Tuesday regarding what controversial internet policy? Way in the back, sir.
I saw your hand.
Net neutrality. Yes. That's correct. So it's not just the Sanders campaign that gets unauthorized access into the Democratic National Committee files. DNC officials say their system was hacked by whom? In the red there, I saw your hand pop up. Russian government hackers. That's right.
So. I can't believe they felt they had to work that hard to get Oppo on Trump. I just don't get it.
Someone said all they have to do is just watch TV.
Just turn on CNN.
Yeah, you get right. It. They could have called them up and the DNC would have sent it.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
We're shipping it over now.
Yeah.
A large plane.
Tennessee State Representative Andy Holt. He had planned to give away an AR-15 at a fundraiser. Then Sunday's shootings in Orlando took place, in which the mass murderer used an AR-15. What did Andy Holt do?
He doubled down.
He doubled down. Literally doubled down. He's going to give away two AR-715.
It was a Sig Sauer.
A what?
Sig Sauer.
Sig Sauer?
Sig Sauer is the weapon that was used. It's not an AR-15 that was used in Orlando.
Oh, well, then it's okay.
No, I just thought I'd, you know.
Okay. At least 75,000 protesters in Paris saw their demonstration turn to violence, 40 injured, 58 arrested. What were they protesting? Sir? Sorry? No, actually not. Ma'am? That's right. Very good. The labor reform law that President Hollande pushed through, upsetting many people on his own party. Okay. Margaret Vinci Helt died at the age of 98 this week. She was the inventor of something used by everyone, from Amy Winehouse to Audrey Hepburn to Jacqueline Kennedy. What did she invent? I saw your hand up first.
The beehive hairdo.
That is correct.
Can we really source that to her? Yeah. You're like prehistoric women or men have that too? Like, come on.
See, are you listening, yeah. Joe?
No,
she came up with the technique.
With a specific technique.
See?
Okay. I don't know. I'm still dubious about that.
It's an engineering thing.
Could she get half a chocolate for that?
Joe has wanted to be the policeman for this quiz for many times.
Yes. So the main speaker at Stanford's graduation ceremony said about Donald Trump, quote, asking this man to assume the highest office in the land would be like asking a newly minted car driver to fly a 747, unquote. Who said it? Who gave the, ma'am, I saw your hand. Ken Burns, filmmaker Ken Burns. That's correct. So just a couple more. Sad story. Authorities in Florida have recovered the body of a 2-year-old child. Who happened what? How did that happen? Sir?
He was eaten by an alligator.
That's right. He was taken by an alligator from near a Disney resort. And I hope I pronounced this correctly. Who is Paul Figueroa? I'll give you a hint. It has to do with Oakland. Oakland. He wears a uniform, sir.
Acting police commissioner.
He is the latest acting police officer.
That is
taking over 6 days after the previous interim police chief. That is correct. Listen, we'll be back with more news quiz questions and, of course, much more to discuss on Monday, July 11th, right here in San Francisco. You can find our week-to-week news quiz every week on Huffington Post. Thanks to our panel, Deborah J. Saunders, Barbara Marshman, Joe Garofoli. Thanks to all of you for coming out tonight and everyone listening and watching online. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.